Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. Well, today's Wednesday, which means we're reading a story from 2010, and in particular today I've got a story for you about World War I. Not the actual war itself, but one of the unintended consequences of all of that stuff. The war blasted an early Oregon version of Bear Grylls in a quest to prove he wasn't really a fraud. Hounded by skeptics who thought he'd spent his wilderness survival time drinking beer at a friend's house, Joe Knowles planned to do something about it under closer supervision, but the Great War broke out and the public lost interest, and he never did get a chance to prove himself up. This one's from September 12th, 2010. Here it is. In July of 1914, when World War I's guns of August started to speak, one of their first casualties happened half a world away in the forest of southern Oregon. But it wasn't a physical casualty. No, the outbreak of the war destroyed the last real opportunity for a man named Joe Knowles to prove he was not a fraud. As a result, most people have never heard of Joe. Those who have think of him as just another in a long line of armchair woodsmen and backwoods charlatans. And maybe they're right, but thanks to those crazy European warlords, we'll never really know if that's the case, or if Joe was the real thing, a genuine marvel whose reputation was ruined by a vicious proxy fight between a pair of rival rag sheet newspapers. The reason Joe needed to prove himself in Oregon was he'd made a national name for himself several years before when he plunged naked, or nearly so, into the wilderness of northern Maine. 3 months later, a scruffy and bearded Knowles emerged from the woods clad in a bearskin taken from a beast that he had reportedly trapped in a pit and clubbed to death, wearing other garments made from the hide of a deer caught and killed with his bare hands. He'd prepared regular messages written on birch bark with charcoal, and these had been used to faithfully document his adventures in the Boston Post. It also helped that he was a skilled artist and used charcoal to sketch scenes to go with his messages. The whole thing captured the imagination of an America that still hadn't quite gotten used to not being a frontier country anymore. Mountain men were already a distant memory, cowboys were a dying breed, and Indians were a tiny and demoralized remnant of a once proud and powerful presence in the land. But here, now, was Joe Knowles, the American Adam, to prove that a naked American could still take on a howling wilderness and not just survive, but thrive. But the Post's rival newspaper, the Boston American, was skeptical, not to mention envious. It published an article presenting a strong argument based on some circumstantial evidence that Joe hadn't spent the entire 3 months in the wilderness. His good friend, who was receiving and transmitting this birch bark messages, had a cozy cabin in the area, reportedly well stocked with Joe's favorite brand of beer. And there were rumors that his animal skins had been tanned by a commercial process and sported bullet holes. Now as then, it seems likely that Joe cheated, at least a little, on his wilderness regimen. It also seems the allegations could easily have been tested by a careful examination of the animal pelts, and the fact that that was not done, so far as I've been able to learn, is particularly damning. So the question remained, did he really do it? And if not, well, then the bigger question remained, which was that because he actually couldn't do it, or was it just because he didn't? Well, luckily for Joe, William Randolph Hearst, the owner of his erstwhile nemesis, the Boston American, was willing to finance a second demonstration. This time, there would be third-party observers in the form of well-known university professors in the woods with him, making sure everything he said was true. And it would take place in the Siskiyou Mountains near Ashland, a continent away from Joe's friends and their suspicious stocks of beer. Hearst's entire edgy newspaper empire was at the ready. Quote, "Wild beasts roar invitation to Joe Knowles," one banner headline in the San Francisco Examiner screeched. Others, perhaps a bit less poetic, were similar. Joe once again stripped off his clothes and dove into the woods. And by all accounts, he was doing pretty well there when, a week later, his story was suddenly shoved off the front pages and the entire nation lost interest all at once. Blood, kiloliters of blood, was pouring every day into the soils of Belgium and northern France. Americans who'd recently emigrated from Germany and Austria and Russia and Britain and France were wondering if some of it was being spilled from their own relatives and loved ones from the old country. The triumphant flower of civilization, held up for a century as a shining example for the developing world, was busy committing suicide. Who cared now about some naked guy beating through the bushes of southern Oregon? Nobody, that's who. Joe's exercise was called off. He did have another chance in 1916 after Americans had tired of war news, but this time, Hearst sent a mostly naked, quote, dawn girl into the woods at the same time. Different part of the woods. They were never together. When a week later she gave up, so did most of the media coverage. Joe ended up living on the coast of Washington in a funny little cabin built with driftwood and bits of wrecked ships. To the end of his days, he maintained that his demonstration of woodsmanship was the real thing. He told Stuart Holbrook he had just two regrets. First, that he didn't manage to befriend a bear cub to lead out of the Maine woods. And second, that stupid war. Well, that's it for our show for today. This show is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone reader, a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, and a couple other minor components. Photographs and other images that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources used in writing this story, along with more than 200 other articles written over the last 5 years, all organized by date of publication. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon for learning and for fun, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations, but if you feel a need to make a donation anyway, may I suggest that you buy a copy of my book instead? It's called Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, published by the History Press in 2012. You can order it from the store link on offbeatoregon.com if you'd like, but if you still have a local community bookstore in your town, I hope you'll consider buying it from them instead. It sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Don't be a stranger, especially don't be a stranger if you have a good idea for one of these columns in the future. Speaking of the future, our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.